This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Next on Plains FM, we have Movie Talk, a program for all things cinema-esque, for the discerning film and video junkie.
To Movie Talk. Today we'll be looking at the follow-up to one of Disney's most beloved animated features, Frozen 2, the portrait of an English artist as an abused man in Mrs. Lowry and Son, and the ultimate whodunit movie, Knives Out.
Find who is calling to you. They may have answers.
I'm going with you.
Anna? No.
Excuse me, I climbed the North Mountain, survived a frozen heart, and saved you from my ex-boyfriend, so... You know, I'm coming.
Frozen 2 is the second episode of Disney's animated story of two young princesses, one with magic powers. Emma Smart has been off to the Hollywood cinema at Sumner to see this delightful tale, which brings back most of the original characters for another fantastic musical adventure. Emma, do you think Frozen 2 is a good follow-up to the original film?
I do, actually. I felt when the first movie came out, it was such a surprise. Like, no one really knew what to expect from it. People were just like overwhelmed by it. It came out of sort of nowhere, it seemed. So following that up with a sequel, it all seems really difficult. And because we know how good the first one was, it always feels weird to review a sequel in the same way because you've got that expectation.
It's also hard for them to make a second one because they have to try to attain the standard of the first one with all its sort of wonderful surprise elements in it. But you can't sort of surprise people with the same thing twice.
Exactly.
So it's not easy to do.
Yeah, but I think they did a really good job. I mean, I didn't feel the same way about it as I did the first one, but that's because it was all new then, and so it was quite different. But what I really liked about the sequel is that they have expanded the world it's in. They've gone further afield. They've got added more characters. And it wasn't... I feel like the characters in it, they actually developed quite a lot from the first movie. It wasn't just another rehash of same characters but a different adventure. Mm. One that could be like straight to DVD. This one actually made them go further and they developed them quite a lot and they had
Well, they're sort of older,
themes.
A little bit more mature in their attitudes and
It felt more like it was necessary to have a sequel rather than just a cash grab. It actually didn't feel like that, which I really liked. And there was a few things in the plot which I won't spoil, but you sort of expected it to go one way and it didn't. So there's kind of that sort of storyline. You're like, oh, yeah, I know where this is going. And then it didn't do that. So it did still surprise me. And it's got way more songs in it, I think. Well, I feel like it's more songs.
Yeah, I don't know. They seem to be singing all the time.
Yeah, I felt like they sang a lot more frequently. Maybe not.
And that was what was so popular about that first film. I think those songs were... turned out quite very popular.
Yeah, well, they won the Oscar for the song.
Yeah. And so I think they've tried to stay up to that standard there also.
Yeah, and to be honest, I mean, people have said, you know, there's no Let It Go song in this film. But to be honest, I didn't like Let It Go the first time I watched the movie, and it grew on me. So I think these songs will grow a bit on you as well. But as far as sequels goes, it's really good. Like, it kind of reminded me of the How to Train Your Dragon sequels, where they expanded the world further and they expanded it further and then they wrapped it up. Although they didn't, admittedly, this isn't perfectly wrapped up.
No. Well, to me, the film reminds me quite a bit of Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. Mm. That's with Angelina Jolie. She also sort of, there were two women, well, her and a sort of a daughter, granddaughter, some sort of distant relationship, some awkward relationship there. And they end up going off into weird places and get separated. Yeah, I don't know what the relationship between these two is or how close or who's helping who or not helping who. You're never quite sure about anything. And also the weird kind of sort of forest areas they go into and the things they see. There seem to be quite a few parallels there.
Right. Oh, one thing I thought about this one was that they had characters like Olaf the Snowman, who's often like a comic relief in it. But in this one, he also had, you know, he furthered the plot. He wasn't just the comic sidekick.
Like, yeah, he was involved a bit too.
Yeah, every character had a reason to be there, which I really liked. And I also liked how it wasn't, I mentioned it before, like the plot wasn't predictable. I mean, it was predictable in ways because it is admittedly aimed at children, not me specifically. but they had a lot of, yeah, the story in it was quite in-depth and involved, and it was a way darker story than the first one.
Yes. And, I mean, what age group would you say that would be for?
I mean, it's still young for the kids, but I suspect it's slightly older than the last one. Maybe, I don't know, maybe 7 to 10 is probably the more they're aiming at it, because there are some themes for sensitive children that they might find a bit much, a bit sad.
Well, one thing that got me thinking is that these girls have gone out back into the country where their own father had been and had problems there and all sorts of things, and different other groups of people and things have been got in there. And but this is... It's got a sort of something that I expect to find in all fairy tale stories, is a sort of an underlying morality or a message to the kids, some moral message. And I think this one sort of works with this, that these two girls have gone out to fix up something that happened at the time of their father in the past. Somebody's done something silly back then, and it's got to be fixed up, and they are there. They want to check out. They want to find out all these things, what happened, who did what, and not they want to blame anybody. They are just there to help and to fix. And, you know, and I think for this film could, again, I was reading somewhere, some woman was writing that little children enjoy going back to see the same movie again and again. You know, they get to like a film and they want to see it again. Well, with this one, as kids get older, they could see this film again and get a sort of a deeper message and understanding that what this is about. You know, this is about courage and curiosity. And then there's a challenge to understand the mistakes of the past and all of this sort of thing.
It was almost like a colonization thing, like going back to fix what had been, you know, to make right what had been done wrongly in the past, which I thought was quite a strong message. I was like, well done. Yeah.
So, you know, and this is there. Now, as a kid grows older, they might get more out of it on that level. But then, don't forget, it's also a lot of fun. There's all these weird creatures running around about, and there's also a lot of creative stuff tossed in.
And there's some incredible, like, every time you watch a new Disney or Pixar movie, the technology has advanced so much further forward. Like, with Moana, the ocean and the sea was incredible. Oh, yeah. This one, you've got more of that water, you've got snow, you've got all these things, and it's a beautiful scene with all the lights and the snowflakes and things that are just amazing. So... yeah, it's worth watching just for that as well.
Yeah, and take your mum and dad.
Yeah, everyone can enjoy it.
That was Emma Smart with her views on Frozen 2, and I'm Hans Petrovic on Movie Talk on Plains FM 96.9. I'd like to thank the sponsor of the show, the Harcourt's Grenadier Accommodation Centre, which is now located at 98 Moorhouse Avenue. If you're looking for a place to live, check out the Harcourt's Accommodation Centre website, www.assetmanagers.co.nz. That address again, www.assetmanagers.co.nz.
How was your day, Mother?
I just lie here waiting for the inevitable.
Oh, today I saw a woman. She had a beard.
Is that legal?
I found her rather beautiful.
No wonder you've never had a girlfriend.
Mrs. Lowry and Son takes us into the aggressive relationship between an English artist and his mother, who tries to dissuade him from pursuing his passion for painting. Carolyn Brown's been off to the Academy Cinemas at the Colombo Shopping Mall to see this rather dark, intense film. Carolyn, what do you think of Mrs. Lowry and Son?
Well, dark's the right word for it, is it? It's not really much of a comedy.
Certainly not many moments of fun in this one.
No. And I think it's really good acting between Timothy Spalding and Vanessa Redgrave. You can really see it. But it's just not it's an interesting film. I think you have to be in the right frame to watch it. I think you should be in a depressed mood when you go in there.
I think this is just one of these films. Be warned beforehand. It is heavy going. It's still fascinating stuff to watch.
Yeah.
But it's not always easy to watch.
No.
There's one older woman with her son. Well, he's not young anymore either.
No, but he is younger, but he's played, it's quite interesting because he's not actually that... Oh, he's middle-aged, but yeah. He seems to be played as a much older man by Timothy, by Tim. He goes on to do an awful lot more after she's dead.
Yes,
so it's really
yes.
interesting that they chose this time part of his life to make a film about him.
Yeah.
But even though, yes, his mother did have a very massive impact on his life, I think they could have brightened it up at the end by saying how much better his life got.
Well, this was actually based on a play.
Yes, and you can pick that straight from the start.
Because most of the most of the scenes are in this one bedroom with the mother in bed, bedridden and ill.
And very heavy on dialogue.
And essentially it's just those two who do all of the talking.
Yeah,
the
and they do carry the film. I mean, at no point did I think, I just want to go and leave the theatre now. This is too much. So from that point of view, it held my interest that way. But it is very heavy on the dialogue and it's very heavy on the sadness of it all.
Yeah. Well, this is based on an actual English artist, L.S.
Yes.
Lowry, and who in the first half of last century became quite a top artist, mainly for his sort of where do you live?
Up in the industrial area.
Up north.
In the Midlands? Yeah, I think. Yes, Manchester.
I've lost it. But yeah. But, he did sort of shots of this industrial area, the working people there, all of this kind of thing, in a style which by himself, was still considered pretty new at that time.
Mm.
And
his perseverance is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, because he has a crappy day job. He's a rent collector, so he gets around, knocked around by people hiding from him all the time.
Yeah.
Then he comes home to his mother, who is bedridden, and she's not very happy because she's miserable. And but still he finds his passion to paint and deal with the critics as well, because it took a long time for him to become well-known for his painting.
Well, I must admit, I'd never heard of him.
No, I hadn't either.
This is so to me it didn't mean anything, but I've spoken to a couple of English people and they are fully aware of him. They want to see the film. And fair enough, I said, do go, you'll find it fascinating, but be careful. It's not easy going. You were saying to me earlier that you could understand that the woman, the mother herself, she had
pushing the trauma of her life onto her son's life in a way. And I don't think they were very sympathetic to that. They just painted her as very cantankerous and they kept on focusing on the fact that she thought she deserved a better life for being better than middle class. But in real life, she was actually a very sick woman and she was bedridden and she can't be happy all
and
the
time. And then she'd been left by her husband.
Yes.
And you get these flashbacks of her at a piano where you can see that she wanted to become a concert pianist. And this never happened, mainly because her son was born just at the time when this should have happened.
Yeah, and other things
so she missed out on that. And possibly this is what made her a bit bitter about her
son. A bit bitter. I mean, sure, yes, she made some interesting life choices, but I do think they could have played are a little bit more sympathetic than what they did. But having said that, it's a really interesting look at relationships between mothers and sons.
I hope there's not much of this
sort of thing. No. And how mothers can really have such a massive influence on their child's life. I mean, he could have at any point said, well, bugger you, I'm going to go off and have my own life. But instead he chose to look after her and be the dutiful son, which goes to show the relationship that they had.
Yeah, and that's right until the end, because when she died, I think it was about 1939.
Yeah, 1939. Lucky she didn't live during the war.
And he was 52 years old then.
Yeah.
And he had lived with her alone, those two in one house, up until that time.
So he went on to be an artist for the army. afterwards as well. So there's a, I feel like there's another film
coming. Yeah, this,
in
yeah,
this
they he could, deserves
they,
it.
They deserve to make another film about the later half of his life, and he was free from his mother, and he did all these wonderful things.
I mean, and he must have been quite well known, because he was actually even to receive knighthood.
Yeah, well, he refused,
and he refused that because his mother was dead and would not have been.
He didn't see the point, and quite sadly, he didn't have a relationship with another woman, although he did leave all of his money to a young protege that he had. But anyway, but back to the film. It's an interesting film about relationships. Definitely don't go and see it if you're already in a bad mood or anything like that.
And I'll also just point out that one thing. Do you notice in the film that she keeps on calling him Laurie?
Yes, Laurie.
And their last name is Lowry. Yeah. I could never figure this out at all.
His first name is Lawrence.
But that's the whole point. His first name's Lawrence. Sorry, she called him.
He was settled right from the start.
Laurie Lowry.
Oh, Lawrence Lowry.
Okay. Okay, well, thank you.
Cool, thanks.
That was Carolyn Brown helping me with Mrs. Lowry and Son, and I'm Hans Petrovic, a movie talk on Plains FM 96.9. I'm gonna live
till I die. You think one of his family Walls.
Killed? Is that what you're suggesting?
You all love twisting the knife into one another.
Up your ass.
Oh, very nice.
Matter of fact, eat shit. How's that?
In what can best be described as the ultimate satire of all whodunit movies, Daniel Craig plays a detective who is determined to find the murderer of the wealthy patriarch of an eccentric family. Ian Cumming has been off to the Lumiere cinemas to see this first-class offbeat movie. Ian, I was surprised that this very complex film also was a lot of fun. What did you think of Knives Out?
Well, a lot of fun indeed it was. You know, it's a film that had more twists and turns than The Forgotten Highway.
Yeah, this is it. I mean, that's what surprised me for a whodunit movie. It was so complex, you know, who did what, and new information coming in all the time. Normally in a film like this, I feel quite overwhelmed, as if I can't cope with it all. But in this one, I was just always waiting for the next bit of surprise information which you get tossed in, you know. And it just went from one thing to another. But to me, that was fun this time, instead of being hard stuff
there's some real moments in it, indeed. We have the... let's talk about the director first and the screenwriter, Rian Johnson. And he wrote both.
He's an American. Yeah.
He's an American, and he honed his skills as much as anything on Breaking Bad. He did several seasons of that. Quite a few years ago now. But more recently, he did Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Yeah, and he's got another Star Wars film coming up now.
Yeah,
and this is totally different. Gosh.
Yeah, so really, it's full credit to him with his, you know, putting this extraordinary story together and confusing us all the way through.
Yeah.
And I only figured out towards the end why, it's not a plot spoiler, but why the assistant to... Oh, come on, what's his name?
Christopher Plummer,
the assistant maid to him or something. And every time she tells a lie, she vomits.
Oh, yes, there is some of that going on.
I couldn't work that out while she was doing this, but if you add them all up
together... She's just not allowed to tell lies. She makes her feel guilty.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, this when it comes to whodunit films, the amazing thing is that it's quite early in the film, in the first quarter of the film, that you do find out exactly what happened at the murder. And, we won't tell them even what that was, but
no.
you are told that, so you know exactly what happened, who was involved, and all this sort of thing. And this, and then the film gets complicated because a detective doesn't know this. Mm. The audience does, but he doesn't. And he's got about four different suspects for it, and they're all found guilty, and you don't know which one of those he's finally going to end up blaming for it. And, I mean, this is what causes the confusion.
Well, he pays your money and takes your choice, but you probably won't pick who it was until the very end. In fact, yeah. Yeah, so you mentioned Daniel Craig, you know, Mr. Bond, who's done four films, but he's totally change of character here. He's got a five, well, he's not even in a 5 o'clock shadow. He's unshaven, and he's got this wonderful Southern American accent.
No, well, do you notice at the end of the film, within the film itself, they comment on his awful accent? They say he's got this terrible, awful Southern Kentucky fried accent.
Yes, something like that. So he plays this character called Benoit Blanc, or Blanc, Blanc, that's right, not in the style of Hercule Poirot or Miss Marple or Columbo, or indeed the odious detective in a film I saw the other day, Blood Simple, which was showing at the Lumiere. Anyway, so I slightly digress there, but he's damn good, and so's the rest of the cast. What a good cast. You know, we've got Jamie Lee Curtis, who, by the way, is she's a Baroness Lady Hayden Guest.
I never knew that.
Yeah, her husband inherited the title. So there's a piece of trivia for you. That was about 20 years ago, so she's a lady.
Yeah, and Toni Collette pops up in this
Indeed,
one. I haven't seen her for a long time.
No.
Yeah, and of course, Christopher Plummer, you've already mentioned him. He plays the old father, or the oldest of the lot in there.
Yeah, well, the characters are all well-defined by the writer.
Well, I think they're also given permission to overact if they want to.
And very well, okay, acted, and you could say sometimes overacted, but it's entirely in keeping with the film. So, you know, 290 critics can't be wrong on the tomato. Tomatometer, 96%, nearly 300 critics, and there's only a handful who didn't like it.
Yeah, well, I think this one's actually going to go into my top 10 for the year.
Well, do you?
Yes, I do. And whodunit movies usually don't
do much for you. Okay, well. So we'll have to wait and see about that one. But, you know, full credit to the set designer in the props department. You know, this imposing two-storied house filled with this amazing bric-a-brac and stuff, and which, you know, the director uses is punctuation.
Mm. And, I mean, this is a typical old whodunit mansion, a sort of country house, you know, for wealthy people's home, filled up with the most amazing weird decorations and quite a lot of things that you could kill people with. There were big stacks of knives in
places. It was like a fan. I didn't really pick there were knives until, well, towards the end of the film. But there we go. Yeah, the thing was really rich in atmosphere, wasn't it?
Oh, yes. To me, well, essentially, to me, it's a satire full of surprises. This is my way of describing it best.
I think you summed it up pretty well.
And go and see this one. You can't help but enjoy it, I think.
I couldn't agree more.
That was Ian Cumming with his views on Knives Out. And I'm Hans Petrovic on Movie Talk on Plains FM 96.9, saying goodbye until midday next Wednesday.